Carmen?
Carmen.
And Bobby.
Carmen? Okay, it's a little past 3:04. We will start the meeting with the election advisory panel. My name is Ray Pringle, chair of the EAP. We'll start to my right with introductions.
Thank you. Jerry Holland, Duval County Supervisor of Elections.
Robert Maldonado, Election Advisory Panel.
Linnell Philman, Election Advisory Panel.
Carmen Martinez, Election Advisory Panel.
Okay, with that, we have excused Ingrid and, we'll do with the minutes first, the approval of the minutes. Do I have a motion?
I have a question about the minutes.
Sure.
In one of these paragraphs, Mr. Holland says that he's going to send letters and applications to people that had them last year. Should I read what it is?
That is in reference to those who had vote by mail request in the 22 election in November. Those who have not renewed, we were going to reach out to those who had not renewed because of Senate Bill 90 that dropped everybody off on January 1st. Some may not know that, and so we were going to reach out to those.
Okay, and then your next sentence is that you're also going to send some to an unidentified population.
Our goal is to get as many people as possible to vote prior to the election. If we feel like there's a demographics, whether it be people over 65.
That demographic. That's what I'm asking about. What is the demographic?
Yeah, if that demographics is over 65, we really have not yet done an analysis to see what would be the most productive use of the money. But it will be a demographics. It will only be by age. It won't be by sex or race, you know, so that it doesn't tilt in any, or by party. It won't be by that. So primarily, it'll be looking at age. If it tilts that way, then we'll send to our older population and let them have a sign-up opportunity if they want to vote by mail in the 2024 election cycle.
Clarifies it.
Okay. Any other issues with it? May I get a motion? All approve? All said yes?
Yes.
Yes. Any no's? Okay. It's approved. So we'll go forward with that, with your approval. The update, Supervisor Elections, I guess you have an update?
We always got an update.
Sure,
we're always doing
sure
something to let you know what we're doing. One is we're actively out there doing a lot of voter registration drives. We're now, we were able to contact the superintendent of schools, get a list of the principals. We have sent invites to all the principals to come to their schools. The way the state puts the requirement, it's not on the SOE. It is on the school institution to do a registration outreach to their students. We just feel like we're the best to do it, so we make that offer to the schools. We've already done close to maybe a half a dozen of the high schools. We register and pre-register. You know, as you know, anybody 16 or over to 18 can pre-register. So we're out there doing that. We try to encourage them to do it in the auditoriums versus sometimes the schools just say, well, set up a table in the cafeteria. Those are a tenth of the applications we get when we do an entire auditorium of those eligible students. We're doing that. We're also many people think there's no elections going on. We do elections. We do elections for some of the unions. In fact, we have an election today that I will leave probably after my update or somewhere near that because it's the firefighters' union election, and we will tabulate those today at the election center. So those are some of the elections we're doing. In addition, We were very successful with the city council in getting the funding to replace all our tabulators. They were manufactured before by ES&S. The new ones will also be manufactured by ES&S, Election System and Software. We used the DS200 before. We're using now the DS300. We also upgraded our high-speed counters that we use for vote-by-mail ballots, as well as if there's a recount. They were formerly numbered as the 850s. They'll be the 950s. And in addition to that, we increased the number of express votes so that we could have enough express votes, not just the one that's required in all precincts. There will still just be one at the precinct, but so that all early voting will be on the express votes at the early voting sites. We have expanded early voting. We had 19, primarily 19 has been what's been used in the past. We have 24 early voting sites that are proposed. It is not required for us to go to council for approval of those early voting sites, but I, as in my tradition, have always gone to them with a resolution so that they're aware of what early voting sites we're using, if they have any inputs or decisions otherwise. And I have met with all the council members on both precinct changes and the early voting sites, so what we submit is based on what we've heard from them so far. But that resolution was introduced last night, the resolution on the early voting sites. And then in addition, as you're aware, and we talked about in the last meeting, we had a lawsuit 2 days before I came in office. It was under the Equal Protection Clause. Out of the 14 city council districts, we had some districts as many as 19 precincts and some as few as 9. And so under the Equal Protection Clause, there was not equal access to voting throughout the city. So our offer to the plaintiff's attorneys was, let's find a happy median and let's be no more than one, no less than one, so there's an equal access to voting. That median was 11. And so there is no city council district right now with more than 12 and no less than 10. I think there's one with 10 and there's about half of them with 12 or 11. So everything was good. That was approved by the city council. And then after we got it approved, two things happened. The precinct at Deer Creek decided they had sold the club, they had told the owners they were going to be a precinct. Then they told the owners, no, we're not going to be a precinct. So Deer Creek is not one. So we're not reducing the number of precincts. We moved it. Yeah. So we moved that one. So we'll keep the same number of precincts in City Council District 11, but we will not be at Deer Creek. And so that's one of the changes that went to council last night. In addition to that, in District 10, one of our precincts, after being approved by the council, some of the community leaders and some of the other people had expressed to the council member, well, we don't have a problem with the number of precincts, but we really would like St. Paul's AME, we'd really like it at St. Paul's AME versus the location it was at. To us, it was like wherever the council member wants it, we just have to stay within the number. And so that appeased everyone. So that was part of legislation last night on those two precincts that was introduced to the city council. They'll be moved as an emergency for this reason. We want to get the voter information cards out at the beginning of December. As you know, we're going to send out a new voter card to every voter because we have had probably affecting about 240,000 voters is what it affects our precinct changes. And some affects them even though they're going to the same location. Some council members wanted them renumbered, so some have even the number. So that situation. So we're in that process, obviously, to complete these two pieces of legislation and then send out those voter information cards. We'll also be doing new signage where all the precincts are. We also will be sending out a couple things to notify those voters. One is there will be a person stationed at every polling location that was a polling location, that won't be a polling location, so that if voters do not look at their sample ballot or their voter card and see their precinct has been changed and show up at the polls, there will be a person to direct them, get their address, and direct them to the correct precinct. Now, of course, the difficulty is They come at 6:45 at night or 6:50, and they're moving somewhere else. That, again, the onus is going to be on them to get there before 7 o'clock. There's no extension because they didn't look at the voter information card or the sample ballot. But those are the outreaches that we're doing now on those things. Let me see if there's any other update. Can you think of any? We will send an outreach, as we mentioned, to the vote-by-mail voters who were signed up before. We haven't got a date and haven't finalized that card yet. We have worked on it, so we're doing that. I think that's – yeah, training for poll workers will start in January. All poll workers have to take a three-hour course, and we're redesigning that course and poll worker manual right now, doing that work to be ready. We'll eventually go to some of the poll worker training will be online. It'll never be 100% because we do want them to come in. But as we get through and everyone's used the new equipment, then we will transition to maybe an hour of that training or 2 hours be online. So that's our goal to do that. One of my goals also was to get more representation of both parties in every precinct. We had in the last election, 5 precincts only had Democrats in it, and 16 precincts had all Democrats but an MPA. So there was not what I felt a good representation by the Republican Party. My goal is to have in every precinct at least 2 Democrats and 2 Republicans. I think it just helps the transparency and people, everyone seeing what's going on, not later questioning it. So that's some of the things. Again, out there, any groups that want me to come speak, I'm speaking to, and we continue our outreach. So, yes, sir.
No, the question I have is you want 2 Republicans and 2 Democrats in each one. How are you, what you're doing to reach out to make sure that happens?
Several things we're doing. One is I'm attending any meeting they want to, but we're also going to all the Republican clubs because that's where most of them are, you know, that we can reach to that are actively involved in getting their members involved. And so we've been attending those. Robert's been attending them, signing them up then at that point. We're also, because we went from 186 precincts to 161 with the change in the precincts, that makes it a little easier from the standpoint it gives us a little more poll workers. We also plan some of those poll workers will be used at those precincts that are no longer precincts. And then some will also, what I did before that I will do is there will be a backup, you know, of 20 to 30 poll workers in the morning to go out should there someone not show up. But your question is basically we're out to the individual clubs, you know, out there recruiting with the Republicans. Right now I talked to staff. We had a staff meeting this morning. On the numbers that we've had and signed up, it looks good. What always becomes difficult is you may get a lot of Republicans in one area, but do they want to be in another area? And so when you assign and can you do that, and we'll look to see again if we have the flexibility to, you know, they want to go somewhere else and try to find the people to do that. So.
Yes. Well, I have a question just for clarity. Talked about during early voting, I thought I heard you say that it would all be on the express vote. Do you have like a serious outreach to educate the voter because, you know, we always hear that touch screen?
Yeah. Well, a couple things. One is, and it's truly, one is the express vote is not on the internet. It does not tabulate. It fills your ballot out for you. We are also, from the standpoint, it does not look as the same ballot, but you put it in the same tabulator. It prints to you all the selections that you want, and then there's a barcode, and the tabulator reads the barcode. We have also, one of my staff members has developed an app that we'll be able to share with voters that basically you can take it because it's a standard barcode, put it up to the barcode, and you can also verify that the barcode is the same selections that are printed on there because some people would say, well, I know it's printed, but how do I know the barcode's at? And so we will have that available. We will do more on sharing that and get out there with the express vote. You know, it is definitely anything you change, you know, is something that's going to be. There will be people who only want to fill out a ballot and that's either vote by mail or election day, you know. But the express vote, the new ones that we've got and the new software with the DS300s, they're easier for the operator to operate. And by that I mean is that you don't have to go to the next page for how is it set up? Have you seen it yet? Okay, but it's you get more on one page versus having to go to the next page. So you don't have to go back and forth and things. But it's every election since they've had it, I voted on the express vote. I'll continue to do that because I vote early. But the process is very good. But again, you do have to get that transition of someone being comfortable that, yes, it is a paper ballot that we can reconstruct the election through a hand recount. And so it is available, but it is not tabulated on a machine connected to the internet or anything in that nature. So,
thank you, sir. Yes.
I have a question about that also. The barcode problem is still a problem, but there's going to be a lot of objection to just having those machines. Because last time we were asked to push it at registration, and basically we did, and a lot of people did it, but there were a lot of hardcore people that wanted that paper ballot.
It's the system with the ballot on demand, as you're aware. The ballot on demand, one is we did not replace the ones that we were having difficulties with. As I was talking to the manufacturer's rep today on the express vote and also on the tabulators, is that, and it's a move throughout the state to go to express vote only, is because there's so many working parts on that and sometimes shortages of the ink cartridges for the Oki datas and all those, it can easily put you in a bind at times. And so it's one of those things where definitely we will not, and as a SOE, encourage the poll workers at all on election day to say, why don't you try the express vote? That's not the purpose on election day. And so there will be not, and you know, part of resistance on anything is, why don't you try something? Well, why do you want me to try it? It will be the express vote is what we're using. And what we've talked to on other counties and other places is that when it is what it is, the people will either say thank you or they will wait for election day. The best part is it's early voting. And if they don't want to use it, the day in front of them is election day and they can still fill out a ballot on election day.
The other question I had was, you're expanding the early voting days?
No, sites. We had 19 sites going to 24 sites.
It's still 14 days?
It's 14 days or less. In other words, like for the presidential primary, we'll probably do 8 days. We'll do the weekend on the first weekend, a full week, and actually stop on Saturday on the presidential primary. We're anticipating right now, could change, but right now it only looks like Republican candidates and Republicans voting, which would be about 129,000 eligible voters versus 640,000 eligible voters. So we're reducing the number of days just because you don't need as many if you've cut your voters in third. So, but from a standpoint, it's the number of sites, the additional sites. There's one out at Maxville. There's one down in Bartram. There's the Ed Austin Park in District 2. There is the Southside Community Center on Beach Boulevard near Southside. There is the Edward Waters University. Those are new sites that weren't sites used in the last elections. So,
I distributed everybody's place. My bill summary just got the list of all of those.
Oh, good. Okay.
And the hours.
Okay. It's rattling them off, though.
Yeah. Does that satisfy you?
Yes, I misunderstood. I thought you were expanding the number of days.
Now, by law, we only got a certain number of days, and you can do several things by law. Obviously, when we get to like November and possibly even August, is you can go to the full 12-hour days, and you can go to the full 14 days. In a presidential election, it's the only way to go. Full number of days, full number of hours, and take advantage of everything you can. You just really look at, you know, you can look at previous elections and predict turnout, and you look at that and try to base, you know, what you're spending your money in the turnout and how much effect it has on it. So that's why we just don't do the full amount for every election, because it's not prudent. So,
And I have any other questions here? Okay, I've another question about the sites. I was looking through them. I don't see anything in the Dinsmore area.
The next site we will add will be when the new library is done on the north side up there. There is also one restriction that's different than polling locations, is that early voting sites can only be in a government building except for one location. They give you right now one wild card, they call it. The wild card we're using right now, because there's no government building there, is down in Bartram, and because of the amount of population, it's down there in the Bartram area. But if and we've got, what we did was we've got a map, and our goal is to make an early voting site within 4 miles of every voter in Duval County. Now, that's more difficult when you get into that area.
Well, yeah, you know. And that's where the problem lies, and it's been that way for years.
Yeah.
I live out there, and it's been like we've been forgotten forever. And there is a, if you will, a government building. There's a site right behind the Baptist Church. It's the park, and they got a facility. The city owns the facility right there, and we have meetings there. It's got the bathrooms, and it's got everything. The
you
parking.
Know what it's called? What's the name of the park?
It's the oh my goodness sakes!
Community center.
Yeah, it's Dinsmore Community Center, I believe is what the name of it is. But it's been there for a long time. I know my wife and I, my wife Jenny has been very involved in that.
Yeah.
There's a museum there.
Yeah.
That's owned by the city, and then the facility right beside it.
Okay.
So there's, and we've had we just had a meeting there. I'm a president of another organization.
Yeah.
We had like 175 people there the other night.
So it's got room.
That's, I don't understand why we can't get something there without having to drive.
Yeah. Believe me, as I expand.
I would love to see that happen.
Okay. I will have my staff look at the location, look at where we're at. Probably couldn't do it in March, but maybe it's a possibility to bring around by August or November's election. Uh-huh. But
if I know I have a lot of people. I'm president of this thing out here, so I get a lot of people coming to me and what in the world is going on. Why aren't we looked at like other people are looked at? And statement is we're on the wrong side of the tracks.
Yeah, you know.
Well,
that.
And I mean, yeah, that's, I know, they're serious about it.
But really. I understand.
You know, and so I would like to say, hey, you know, we're getting something here that's more convenient for you. Instead of driving on the other side of 295, it's 12 miles away.
What's your closest one? The one on Edgewood? Highlands?
Highlands would be
close. Yeah.
Yeah, the Methodist Church is where we have to go, which is crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's right there by Lem Turner.
Is the community center right there where the baseball field is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's. We've all kind of meetings there.
Okay, what city council district are you in? Also,
eight. I think it's Reggie Gaffney Jr.
Yeah.
Yeah, I work with him.
Well, we don't
lot.
Have a polling site there either, do we?
There's nothing there.
Yeah, we'll look at it for both.
Because they'd said, well, the Baptist Church says we can't have it there. That don't make sense to me when there's government places there that you can use.
Yeah, we will check it out. Okay. All right, we'll get back to you and let you know.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
All right.
Yes.
A redesign of the training course for poll workers. Could you explain, you know, what led to that and what the new course will entail?
Right. Obviously, the new equipment is primary when it comes to the managers and techs to handle the new equipment, and is there any changes to how you operate? The other thing always is, you know, and I'm not saying we did this in the past, but some counties look at the 3 hours course as almost, Well, you got to be there 3 hours. Just keep them there and entertain them 3 hours, you know. But basically, what we do by doing what we're doing now with the poll worker manual is to make sure all our classes are consistently taught the same. You know, when you have anywhere from 5 to 6 different instructors, you don't want each one freelancing and thinking what I need to cover. So they will preach out of the same Bible. They'll preach out of the same poll worker manual. And then we look at the things that are important. What are the statutes that have changed? Anything pertinent that have changed? And what are the primary things you want to always cover every election? What I used to do and what we'll continue to do is if we have a problem in an election, that we train for it in the next election. You know, if we have anyone that's not, some of the issues years ago was maybe they didn't fill out the provisional ballot completely. Maybe they, you know, didn't get certain information they should have got. Maybe they turned away a voter instead of letting him vote provisional. Maybe they did something where we get some feedback. We, even though it may only happen in one place, we will make sure it doesn't happen again somewhere else. So, again, they're close to finishing the poll worker manual, so I haven't looked at it myself to tell you everything that's in it. Also, I brought back what I called a community outreach and education department, which is where just not one person does that, but there's actually within that department, there's two people who work on staffing, who work on everything from filling and setting and scheduling the classes. Then there's two people that are outreach, and one is actually a former teacher. She's great on the lesson plans and developing that, has an education background. The other one was in media. She's very good on outreach. And then the director had worked for the office before in the last 8 years. So they're more of a team than it was individuals just given responsibilities. They're able to accomplish a lot more, especially on the outreach.
Are there any statutory requirements as far as what needs to be in the course, or is it just the time length that needs to be a certain?
I know the time length is a requirement.
There are some statutory requirements, such as dealing with voters with disability, conflict resolution, and proper operation of the machines.
Yeah, I knew the disability one was very important to state, and that came about probably about close to 15 years, 16 years ago.
In 102.014.
102.014
poll worker recruitment
training. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. Anyone else?
What is the, how do you do this meeting? Are there now new business or what happens next?
Oh, in our meeting. You're talking about our meeting?
Yes. I guess I didn't read the
agenda.
Schedule. Yeah, where's the agenda?
I will say, we didn't talk about it, was there also, is the facility. Disappointed, to say the least, in that I was really hoping, when I first met with the administration, they were very positive on moving the election center in the north side or a downtown office at a location downtown. The DIA, Downtown Investment Authority, did not like our location. You know, they believe that location should go to residential and on-site commercial. And even though it's next to a rescue mission, one reason it's sat for the last 30 years is because that normally that's not where people build houses next to, you know. And so that being said, they kind of squashed it. Said, oh, we'll find you another location, DIA, and I've never heard back from them. We've looked at some other sites, you know, but it is, you know, that was the perfect site. It was between Jefferson and Davis, between, I think it's Union and Beaver Street, right in that area. It was a full city block. It'd be great to put all 70,000 square feet there with parking, central location to the entire city, and really a good use of that property that, again, the city has owned for 30 years. But administration said, no, whatever DIA wants, you know, we're going to go their route. So we're still looking. And I've looked at everything from Sears at Regency to Penny's at Regency to what's some other ones out in the promenade, which is off Bay Meadows, out at the Arlington Expressway, 900 building, but most things are office buildings, and we really don't need to be in a 7-story or 9-story building. We have to be public access. We have to be loading, be able to load out 25,000 square feet of our space on loading docks, bring it back very quickly. It's a unique building. Election Center out there at Imeson works great. It was designed from an empty warehouse, so we designed it exactly what we wanted. It's just not centrally located, but it's better than being in a building that's not designed for what we need. So we have a 2-year lease there. It can be expanded, and we're doing repairs on the downtown office. It had kind of been let go. So we anticipate waiting to see if something happens, but there is no available site that we're looking at that meets our needs or anything downtown that we could build. It's not a priority. It doesn't appear to be anyone but us. So
got a lot of parking out in the north side.
Yeah. Oh, you got a parking lot out there at Imeson. You do.
One other question I forgot to ask, the express vote, and I vote by mail, so
yeah,
I never go in anymore. With the express vote, do they get a paper tabulation when they leave?
Not when they leave. Neither would a paper ballot that you fill in the ovals or the express vote. Do you leave with how you voted? You can, by state law, take a picture of your ballot, so that used to not be required and allowed, but you can do that, take a picture of your ballot. And so you'll see how you're voting. It'll be printed on each of the candidates on that sheet, and then you'll put it in the tabulator.
I was just wondering, because I know we've already been talking that there's a lot of people that still got a lot of questions about, especially some of the older folks, if it was possible that when they voted they could get an idea.
Best thing is take a picture of it. But I will say one thing about the express vote. It is, you got to consider, it is very easy to operate when you consider that someone who is blind can operate it, someone who is even paraplegic that can use a mouthpiece can operate it.
Oh,
so,
like a sipping pot.
Yes, can do that. You've got an operating thing in Braille, and so it is not difficult. It's not like, oh my gosh, how could someone figure that out? It's a computer or something. And even with the new upgrade, it's even easier. So.
Maybe you should promote some of that more, because that's the first I've heard of that.
Yeah. I tell you what we might do as soon as we get the new equipment in is bring one in to the EAP and show how it works and everything so you can get a feel for it.
I know I'm on the Mayor's Disability Council, yeah, too. And
maybe
so
you can bring one there.
That would be a great thing to if you could do that with Kara.
Probably sometime in January we should be
that
up
would be great.
On all the equipment.
I'll probably chat with her when I leave here, but that would be a good thing.
Okay, that sounds good.
Yeah, I like that.
The just briefly back to the change in facilities, did anyone from the city offer alternative sites or suggestions, or they just said it can't be this site?
Just can't be this site. Bring us another site, give us another option. but nothing yet that's materialized. So
the Emerald Trail's not going to go through there, is it?
No, not through that one particular lot. I'm still waiting to see what, believe me, I've been told the same story for 20 years now. Oh, we got plans for that. So,
I know.
I think I'm not going to outlive the plans.
Yes.
I know on the agenda we're going to talk about confirming the dates for our meetings going forward, but I wanted to ask, would there be this is kind of like two things converging, even a consideration to have one off-site meeting at the SOE office as opposed to...
Yeah, we've had that in the past. It's been a couple of years or so.
We did that last year. You do have some new members since we did
Yes.
It was, matter of fact, I think we did it before we used the express votes.
I'm the poll worker.
Special election in 2020.
Yeah, I feel like we did it like a tutorial on these first.
Yeah, both of y'all were there.
Yes.
But we could,
That would be
we'd
good.
We'd welcome down to the election center and go through there.
So if we could set up a meeting that's off cycle or one of the meetings that we have could be at the SOE center.
We'd welcome that. We just had a group from Kazakhstan come this week. Very interesting group. So, yeah, their elections are quite different too. They have a presidential election next year. The president decides when to have the election.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Tell us more about that. I'm just curious. they do.
They have a lot of corruption in their election, and the group that came over are really their integrity ones, trying to make the elections fair and everything. It's just so much a manipulation of who works the polls and how they turn in the votes. It was very interesting. But they were just inquisitive as we went around, saw our equipment, and they wanted to know if they could take home the equipment we're no longer going to use. And said, no, we had to trade that in. So
whoever's got the biggest machine gun.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Even in January, we could do it out at the election center if y'all want
to. Would you like to do that? Sounds good. So
you might be there for manager training already.
That'd be good.
Spend the whole day.
Exactly. All right. Well, that would, if you would set that up for the next meeting at the site, at the SOE. Everybody? Yes. Yeah, I think it would be great. Closer to home.
Especially if you have the new version.
Close to
you. They will be.
For us to see and touch.
We will have that, the DS-300s and the 950s all set up by then. So.
Can I ask quickly about poll worker recruitment and retention and kind of what numbers are looking like? I know in the past, Robert City would provide statistics and kind of breakdowns of age, other demographics as far as, you know, who the poll workers are. So is that something that can be available moving forward? And also just generally speaking, how are we looking, you know, this point compared to past elections as far as, you know,
from what workers? We can tell now, and it's early because in a couple of things. One is poll workers have to pass the exam and, you know, are they qualified to do it again? How many come back? We're very fortunate a large group comes back after every election, and that's a great thing. You know, a lot of times people encourage us to get more young people, and we'd love to have them to expose them to it. But a lot of times they want to do it once, and that's, I've been, done it, got the T-shirt, and move on, you know. But our retired really comes back, you know, for a long time. But we can get you on the next meeting. We can get you demographics. We always, again, we want to try to move that age down a little just because they'll be with us longer, you know. But again, we've been fortunate, and I think Robert will say, of always having enough staff, having the diversity of this staff when it comes to party has been the issue.
And to that point, roughly how many additional Republican poll workers did you need to recruit to meet your 2-2 goal per?
I want to say, because I was looking at numbers early, to get the 2 in every one, because a lot of one, even I had Republicans, didn't have 2 in it, was about 130. Now, that sounds like a lot, but when you're probably staffing 1,200, 1,300, it's not a lot relative to the total number.
I have a question about recruiting. The problem with retention of the older people is that they can't do the 14 hours. Is it law that it must be done that way, or could you split it up?
We were looking in that today. You know, early voting, you don't have to do the whole 2 weeks. We split up the weeks. Where the concern is, and even talking to other supervisors, is what we call the chain of custody, you know, which is one group responsible all the way through. So at the end of the night, as you know, a manager has to reconcile the ballots to the number of voters. We never want to get to the end of the night and go, well, they don't match, but that it was really because of what was there in the morning or what was there. So my concern is, yes, it's easier on the poll worker, But when it comes to the integrity of the process, it's better to have the same people the whole day and the same group I can hold accountable. Even when it comes back to, if I get a voter who calls me the next day and say, I want to tell you at the precinct, you know, I don't know what time I was there. It was late morning or maybe early afternoon, but I really had an issue. And you go, and if you call up and say, well, that was the crew in the morning, or that was this, that accountability makes it tough.
What about splitting, having your, you know, main people be there 14 hours, but then having like a little additional crew come in later?
You know, the only ones I could see that would not be detrimental to the integrity of it would be the deputies, would be the only ones. Because, again, they're not involved in that handing voters and the tabulation and assisting voters. Because, as you know, poll workers, if they need assistance, you got to send two of them to them and assist them. So the deputy not being involved, that's the only one I could see, you know, that I would feel comfortable with if they weren't there the entire time, you know.
Well, I'm not saying that the main people not be there the whole time.
No, I understand
I'm saying
that.
Add some later to make it, you know, understaff in the beginning and then full staff after a certain time.
I'm one of those, I want that whole precinct to be accountable, and so that no one can point fingers and say it was the morning crew, it was the afternoon crew, or even if it wasn't the whole crew, it was the worker that was here in the morning, it was this one or that one. You know, the other side of it is you can't pay them for a whole day. So the question is, you know, you also, who wants to come early and get up early in the morning? You know, maybe a different one than who wants to get there, you know, at 1 in the afternoon to finish the second half of the shift. You know, so there's enough issues. If I got to the point where I couldn't fill it any other way, I'd contemplate it. But I think for the overall integrity, I'm better off with a staff that's there the entire time.
Yeah, I have a question. People with handicaps that would like to serve on that, would you accommodate them with the things that they have to go through? There's situations that people with handicaps, and every one of them is a different.
Yeah.
So is that something that, I mean, I can see what could entail, but it's something that you could provide?
The key is this, and obviously wanting to be accommodating would be something we'd want to do. I try to always, and no one can ever do that unless you have a disability, I try to put myself in a place of what their disability and say, can I do certain functions? If you're checking in voters and you need to check the ID to the person and you're visually impaired, it's not going to work.
Well, I understand,
you know?
Yes.
In the same way, we're, you know, first starting with the disability of sight, where is that going to work? If a person has a hearing disability, you know, and they ask, will you verify your address, but they can't hear, that may be a disability that may be difficult to overcome. So I would never discourage anyone to say, here's my disability, can I work? If your disability is physical only, you know, with your arms and legs and things of that nature, it may very well be easy to work. Easy to work as a deputy, easy to work even right there next to the tabulator where you're handing out I voted stickers and making sure they can put it in the right thing. So that's why I can't encompass and say all disabilities we can accommodate. But also you got to realize we go out of our way to make sure every polling site and early voting site is ADA accessible.
Well, I understand that part. I'm talking about the worker.
But
if someone would come in and say, I want to work, and they have that hearing impairment, so are you going to say they can't come in?
I don't know unless what the work is and what the hearing impairment can be overcome. Because, again, they have to, again, be able, when they ask the question, you know, is your address the same as what's on your ID?
Oh, I understand, but I know what the legal persuasion is, too.
Yeah.
So what would you do if you had to face that?
If I had to face that, I'd consult my attorney is the first thing I would do and say, what I do if they can't complete the task.
Right.
And listen, I'm not an ADA attorney, but I would say that if you can't complete the task, I don't know if there's an obligation that you have to hire. But why I was saying that facilities are ADA is if a person has mobility, our sites are set up so they can access the site. You know, years ago, I mean, you can go back to older churches and stuff, there were no ramps. There was, it was the steps in the front, or you came in the back door, or you did something. So everything now is to make sure if we can get a voter in the front door easily on their own and can do what they want to, and that we check the pull on the doors, all those things, then at least we can aid a worker that has that. But I think in something, you know, visually impaired or hearing impaired, there may not be a job.
And I understand, but I just, it's kind of like Murphy's Law.
Yeah.
And so I face some of these things, and people ask me this all the time. And so it's just something I just wonder about. And it's in the back of my mind that one of these days the supervisor election is going to happen.
maybe. So that's when that call to the attorney. So
a hearing impaired person sit by the drop box.
Yeah, there's certain places, yes, you can. There's roles, and that's what I said. The deputy, you could do certain things, you know, if you were physically impaired or this or that. So you just have to find out what the role, you know. But some roles you would, unfortunately, you'd need your sight or need your hearing or, you know, so. And even there's a requirement,
I'm sure you could find a place for them somewhere or another.
I'd sure try.
Because there's Braille and all kind of stuff.
Those driver's licenses aren't Braille. So, you know. And he's still got to see the voter to identify the voter.
I totally understand.
Yeah. So, we'll figure out what we can do.
So we're going with these dates? I don't
think we're there yet. We haven't got to that yet.
Okay. Well, I've got to go count some votes.
Thank you.
I'm going to leave Robert here. So
alrighty.
Anything you like to yell at me at, Robert is the man to do it.
He's used to it. I still have some questions. Sorry.
Oh, he can still answer. He is. Oh.
Kind of for you.
Oh, throw them at me.
You're claiming that you're going to do all this outreach to the people that have voted by mail in the past, and that is an issue that we really need less vote by mail. I mean, it's not the policy of the state, but it can be your policy.
Well, we're definitely in opposite sides of that. And by that I mean is along that everything that we do is what the state has certified is a valid method of voting, then there's no reason I should discourage one over the other. And
encouraging one over the
I'm encouraging all three. But if someone, and I look at it this way, I mean, my goal is really, if I could get every voter who's registered to participate, you know, now some people say, well, they don't want to vote. But again, making voting accessible is the way, you know, a lot of times they will come to an SOE and say, the turnout's so low, what are you going to do about it? Most of what drives turnout is not the SOE. It is the candidate. It's your desire to come vote, get off your couch, and go vote for a candidate or vote against a candidate even, you know. But it's that desire. But for me, it's to make sure that voting is accessible to equally across the county. Vote by mail is a critical way that a lot of our citizens have to vote. And I will say this, if you look at vote by mail people who sign up for vote by mail, their turnout is typically twice that of people who will drive to the polls, which means if my goal is to try to get people to participate in elections, I get twice the participation if I get them to sign up for vote by mail, you know. And there's nothing, I can tell you, as much as there is nothing wrong with vote by mail. We check the integrity of it by the signature. The ballot, you know, the tracking, everything is there. It's valid. It's certified by the state. So to me, it's just as secure as Mr. Pringle votes by mail, you know, as any other form of voting, you know. I know there are people who would like only one day of voting. But, you know.
I'm not going that far, and I definitely think you should vote by mail. But our goal should be not to have vote by mail because even though a lot of people like it, it's a source of fraud in many places, perhaps not in Duval County, but it is a source of fraud. And I would like to express my opinion to you.
I appreciate that.
The SOE, that vote by mail has got to be revisited. And as a policy in our county, not sure that I like the policy of reaching out to an undetermined population that voted by mail in the long past.
Well, not long past, November 2022, because they expired on January 1st, you know.
Okay, but the ones that voted in 20 and 19 or whatever, those people don't need to be reached out to. They need to be excited by the candidates to come vote.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I don't see it as...
With an aging population and, you know, it is the way that a senior can vote. That's easy for a senior to vote.
That's the way that states like Washington State and Colorado have had all these problems.
But again,
total vote by mail.
I am responsible for the seventh largest county in the state of Florida and only that one county. And that's why I feel very good about our process. I feel very good about how we check the signatures and how we do the training for checking the signatures. I feel very good from the standpoint of if your signature doesn't match, the state of Florida allows you to rectify it and come in and show your ID. So it's not if I make a mistake or if I sign it different or something that I can't fix it. Until the state says
I agree
now,
with you
if,
there.
If the state does away with vote by mail, then I'll be the guy doing it whichever way the state. There's a House Bill 357 that wants to do counting the votes on the precinct level and no equipment unless it's all the parts are built here in the United States. And if they pass that legislation, I'll follow whatever the law is. So, but
I
want to get more voters.
And
yeah.
I agree. It's very nice and it's very safe.
Yeah.
But still there's things that occur out of Duval County that are a problem. And
so let me encourage Duval.
Encouraging the vote by mail, which is a problem.
In Duval County. I'm not encouraging anywhere else. And also, we also do our drop boxes only at early voting sites, manned by a poll worker. So you can't ballot harvest and come in and drop them in. And so, you know, from that standpoint, I like to think we have all the security. Because other places do it wrong and make mistakes, I don't want to penalize our voters for that. So, but anyway, I do respect your opinion. All right, I'm going to go count some votes, see who the firefighter's next president is. So,
they pay you for that? I mean, us,
they pay
the city?
They pay for the cost of the election. Yes, they do. And the unions, the other unions we do, they pay for the cost. If we do any of those, what we call private elections, the cost is paid.
Personally,
no,
the city.
No. Is Randy on the ballot? No, he retired. Yeah. So, y'all have a great day. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Look forward
Thank
to
you.
Seven.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Well, now we can go forward with the old business. Does anyone have old business that we need to bring up?
I know we had discussed membership on our in our most previous meeting, and Ms. Martinez being a new member. Do we have, and maybe this is to you, Jeff, do we have any updates on potential? Because I believe Daniel and Ingrid were serving on expired terms, and are they still with us? Are they? Because I think that was some confusion with Ms. Chrisman, because I remember her term expired, and then technically she still sort of should have been serving. But
didn't we vote on one that? Who was that we voted on? There was one that we voted that hadn't been here, and
I think that was Nancy Chrisman.
That would take her off of the.
I think maybe. Oh, no. Yeah. I guess it just boils down. My question is, do we have any candidates or have you been made aware of any?
None that I'm aware of, no.
And I apologize. This is because
Can you use the mic?
Yeah. So I'm not aware of whose seat that Ms. Martinez took or is representing the city council. Do you know who you went through the city council?
I did go through the city council, but I think that the SOE nominated me.
Okay, so that's another SOE.
I really don't know how that worked. So
if someone, it should be a record somewhere.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the ordinance is 3 from the SOE, 3 from the mayor, and 3 from the city council president. I know I'm a city council appointee.
Yeah, I'm SOE.
Ms. Martinez filled the seat that was vacated by Nancy Christman, and that's a council appointee.
And I'm an SOE.
Yes, you were an SOE appointee.
So, I, and Bobby, I think we you hit on a good subject there, is finding out what's the process of contacting the mayor. I think the mayor has people that she can appoint. Is there someone in the mayor's office that, I know there is someone in the mayor's office that does appointments.
Yes.
I can't think of her name right now.
Garrett Dennis is.
It's changed. Yeah. Yeah, Garrett is now the. And maybe I could. You want me to go chat with him, or?
I think they're aware that they have vacancies. I know the council president gets a list every month of vacancies that they appoint people to, and it's just a question of whether they can find people.
Or whether they care.
Whether they care to. I mean, there's lots of seats go unfilled.
That's what I've found a lot of times. And I don't mind going and chatting with Garrett at all about it. Or someone needs to reach out to the mayor's office, and I'll do so if you don't mind.
Or maybe a letter from the board.
Oh, yeah. That would be good, too. We could send a letter to the mayor. Is that... That would work better, I believe.
You want me to draft that?
Yes, sir, if you don't mind.
So is the assumption that it's the mayor's seats that need to be filled?
I think there's...
You don't have an outstanding city council seat?
The mayor is, and the city council,
there's one of each.
Yeah.
Okay.
Currently vacant, and then, as we said, I think... Daniel Henry and Ingrid Montgomery may be serving on expired terms, and that's also one council president and one mayor. So it would be two each. I don't know if... I think Daniel's been on long enough that I imagine he's not eligible for reappointment, and probably the same with Ingrid. I don't think either one of them are eligible for reappointment. While. Yeah, she's been on for many years.
Was it 6 years? Is the I don't know. Every one of them is different.
I think they're 3 year terms, if I'm not mistaken.
But you can get 2 3 year terms. Is that
yes?
That's the way the Waterways Commission was, and I've done 4 terms. I don't know why, but I did.
I know you can do a partial term, because I was appointed to 2 partial terms before my first full term.
Yeah.
And I just got reappointed to a 2nd full term. That's all the old business I have.
Okay. Anyone else? All right. We'll go to new business. Now we'll talk about the meeting calendar. January the 17th, April the 17th, June the 26th, September the 18th, and December 4th. Is that a problem with any of the members? Does everybody agree this is the meeting?
Yeah, we get that before the presidential primary, after the presidential primary.
I remember us talking about that a couple of months ago to line it up to where it would be in correlation with all these things. Yeah, great.
Awesome.
Yeah, I think that we would had chatted about that. Good. All right. So any other council members, would you have anything to?
Just on the meeting session, you wanted to do the January at Imeson?
Yes,
the operations center?
Yes.
Okay.
So everyone understand we'll have it at Imeson in January. And we have any public comment? So our next meeting is be determined at the SOE headquarters in Imeson on January the 17th, and with any more we will adjourn. I get a motion.
Couple questions. Yeah.
Yes.
Not new business, really is new to me. What are we supposed to be doing? I mean, Mr. Holland came and gave us a report. Okay, what are we doing? What are we
well,
doing?
We're an advisory panel, so the things that, as you have, I mean, you had quite a few questions, which were very, very good questions, and so that's the thing that we can chat with people in the community and get their attitude, if you will, of what is going on and what they would like for us to represent to the to Mr. Holland. And so in our community, we are just representatives of this panel. It's an advisory panel. It's nothing that we do that is going to make any governmental decisions whatsoever. So
basically all the decisions are his.
Yes.
And we can advise or give an opinion representing the people we represent in the, you know, our the general population of the city.
Yeah, it's just like when I come and talk to him about Dinsmore. There's a lot of people in Dinsmore that's upset about being left out, and so you can come in and convey their message to the supervisor of elections that a lot of times you can't chase them down themselves. So it's important that we hear the people in the community and the meetings that we go to. I know I'm in quite a few meetings during the month, and so that's something that's important too. And maybe chatting with each other and seeing what's happening around the rest of the county, because we're only governed inside Duval County.
And if I may, Mr. Pringle,
yes.
We also submit a annual report to City Council that kind of summarizes all of our meetings throughout the year, and then that informs City Council on funding levels, deficiencies, things like that, so then they can work with the supervisor's office on rectifying anything that needs fixed.
Okay.
That pretty well
answered.
Yeah, and I understand just getting on this panel. It's when I first got on, I'm sitting there thinking, like, what the heck's happening? And it takes a while, and we don't have Daniel here to get on his computer for a while. And I know when I went in, I was interrupting him, and he was looking at me like, it's his time. So we finally kind of figure out, and that's something that as we go along, it's just an advisory panel, and but I think that we've done it's a really good meeting, and the questions have been really good, and I'm glad the supervisor election, Mr. Holland, is here. I chatted with him right after he was elected. He told me, he says, if nothing happens, I'll attend every one of the election advisory panel meetings, which is a great thing. It's good to see him here. And any other comment before we close? I get a motion.
Second.
All right. We are adjourned. Thank you for coming.
Thank y'all.